Welcome back to the Dirt Show. What on earth is going on in the House of Representatives? Why can't the Republicans get their house in order? They won the election. There are more Republicans than Democrats in the House. They have the majority. Committee chairmen are waiting to take over and do to the Democrats what the Democrats did to them. That's certainly what Jim Jordan would like to do when he becomes chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and perhaps other chairmen as well plan to do that. But they can't even swear in members of Congress. It's ironic. The people who are now voting for who will be Speaker of the House are not members of Congress. They were elected. They're members-elect. It's the day they're supposed to be sworn in. All of their parents and grandparents and children and uncles and aunts and college roommates are there to watch the swearing in, but no, it's not going to happen. And the House of Representatives just adjourned for the night. And so we've had these votes. They in 19, 20 people voting against Kevin McCarthy for Speaker of the House. I want to make two analogies before we get into too much detail. Number one, same thing could easily have happened when the Democrats narrowly controlled the House of Representatives. It wasn't as narrow as this. But remember, there are as many Democrats, 20 or so, who are fringe extremists on the hard left who didn't like Nancy Pelosi being Speaker of the House. You can be sure that there are plenty of members of the squad and their associates who would have preferred one of their own candidates, in fact, maybe Jeffries, who's now taken over as minority leader of Democrats of the House. But Pelosi, to her credit, managed to herd the cats and keep them together. And with a lot of reluctance, I think, she was elected. It could easily have happened the other way. It could easily have happened that what we're seeing with the Republicans could have happened with the Democrats, if not for different personalities. I think that Nancy Pelosi is a more effective leader and more likable to her constituents. Apparently, I don't know Kevin McCarthy. I've met Nancy Pelosi. I don't know her. She seems more amiable than McCarthy. And look, as with so many things in contemporary America, this all goes back to Donald Trump, of course. I mean, the reason for this is that the Freedom Caucus and the MAGA extremists, you know, who still think that that Donald Trump is the president of the United States and that Joe Biden is a pretender who actually lost the election. That's the reason for this, ultimately. That's the reason the Republicans didn't do that well in the midterm elections, because almost everybody who supported that fiction of Biden having lost the election lost their elections. And many of the people who Trump supported lost their elections, not all, but enough so that what was supposed to be a red wave, a romp, turned into a very, very close election. So that's one comparison between what's going on with the Republicans today and what would go on with the Democrats at some future time, or could easily have gone on with the Democrats had they not have had as effective a leader as Nancy Pelosi. The other comparison I want to make is, as you know, I just came back from Israel. It's the same thing there. It's the same thing there. Netanyahu is Kevin McCarthy. That is, he is the kind of center right guy who was elected as the head of the Likud, and the Likud got the most votes, and he was asked to put his government together, but he couldn't do it. Couldn't do it for a few weeks because you got the people on the extreme right, the people like the people who voted against McCarthy today, people who wouldn't join his government, wouldn't allow him a majority unless he was willing to make a lot of compromises, some of them much, much too far to the right. For example, we saw Ben-Gvir, one of the people who was brought in to the government along with Smotrich. Ben-Gvir goes to the Temple Mount, which There's a deal. You know, you're not supposed to upset the status quo. I don't like the deal. I think Jews should be allowed to pray on the Temple Mount. It's where the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, was for many years, and it's where, you know, a mosque is, the fifth or sixth or seventh or 12th most holy mosque. It varies. When the Jews control it, it's the second or third most important mosque. When the Jews don't control it, it's the 12th or 13th most important mosque. So it's very, very political, obviously. Jerusalem isn't even mentioned in the Quran except by a different name, and as perhaps the place where Muhammad went up to heaven. But Jerusalem was never so holy a city in Islam until the conflict with Israel, the nation state of the Jewish people, arose, and then it became a flashpoint. But in any event, these extreme right wingers are creating problems. Bibi Netanyahu had to cancel a trip now to the Gulf because of tensions that arose as the result of right wingers going to the Temple Mountain and trying to change the status quo. So Bibi Netanyahu managed to do what McCarthy has thus far not been able to do, and that is extend enough of an olive branch and offer enough compromises to get a majority and put together his government, which he's managed to do. McCarthy hasn't done that yet. I don't think he will do it. It's conceivable that he might, but there'd have to be a lot of horse trading and a lot of concessions. And one of the concessions would weaken the Speaker of the House considerably. The extremists want to have any one member of Congress call for a vote to oust the Speaker of the House. McCarthy has given in to that for the most part, but he said, I want five. You need five. They get five easily. So I don't think there's a big difference between one and five. It just means that virtually a tiny number of people could put the Speaker of the House out of office. It would turn the House of Representatives essentially into a parliamentary system where, by a simple vote of Parliament, whether it be the British Parliament or the Italian Parliament or the French Parliament or the Israeli Parliament, usually all you need is a majority vote and you get rid of the Prime Minister. That's why there are no impeachments of prime ministers in most other parts of the world. That's why it's such an important provision in the American Constitution, because there's no way of ending an American presidency other than by unelecting him after 4 years or by impeaching him or her for treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors. You know my views on that. In any event, so far, compromises have not been accepted by the hardliners. We thought the hardliners may have been five or six or seven. It turns out they're now 20. Now, you know, it may be that there are 20 because there are 20 people there who would like to get compromises in their favor, good committee chairmanships, or other things that favor them. And one way of getting those favors is to hold out and make a quid pro quo, essentially. I'll vote for you on the fourth ballot, the fifth ballot, the sixth ballot, but you have to promise me the chairmanship of this committee or subcommittee. That may be going on, and that may be the reason why there was an adjournment, so that kind of horse trading, which is best done out of public view, can be accomplished. We don't know. I have to tell you, the framers of the American Constitution did not create a system designed for efficiency. If you want to have an efficient system, you have a parliamentary system. It's one body, it rules. The parliament then decides who the prime minister is going to be. And in some parliamentary systems, they decide who the judges are going to be. It's very efficient. And if there's a vote of no confidence, you get a new prime minister. The American system couldn't be more cumbersome. There are basically four branches of government. You learn in civics that there are only three, but there are four. You know, there's the executive, the president, really five when you think about it. There's the president, he's the executive. There's the administrative agencies, which are under technically the president, but they're independent now, many of them. They make as much law as Congress does. So you have the presidency. You have the administrative agencies, the alphabet agencies, the New Deal agencies, which are now coming under some Supreme Court control. So that's two. Then you have the judiciary is three, although you have the Supreme Court, and then you have lower courts as well. And then you have a bicameral legislature, which really means two separate legislatures. You can't get anything done unless both houses agree. So in order to really get anything done, essentially, you need five branches agreeing. And at a time of such enormous division in our country, ideologically, politically, religiously, racially, ethnically, you name it, gender, it's very difficult to get anything done. As I've said before, I think I said it yesterday on the show, if the United States didn't have a constitution and there was a constitutional convention, it would never end. It would make the House of Representatives vote seem like it's a simple vote. We'd never agree on a constitution today. We're much too divided a country, and we're much too divided a people, and too divided a media. By the way, our system of checks and balances, although it officially contains only the five branches of government, also includes essentially non-governmental institutions like the media. They have an enormous impact on American governance. The academy, which unfortunately today has had something of a negative influence on governance, but it's there. Religion, we have separation of church and state, which was essentially another, when you think about it, another form of check and balance. In most countries in the world, in the end of the 18th century, the church was controlled by the state, or the state was controlled by the church. The Anglican Church in England still is the official church. In many European countries as well, there's still an official established church. And by brilliantly separating church from state in the First Amendment to the Constitution, we created another check. That is, religion now is an independent check on governance. It's not controlled by the government. The First Amendment, freedom of speech and freedom of the press, is also another check and balance. In communist countries, obviously, there's no free press. The government controls the press. Sorry, I'm still suffering a little from COVID. In China, nothing gets put in the press unless the Communist Party wants it there. In Russia, nothing gets put in the press unless Putin wants it there. In America, everything gets put in the press that the president doesn't want or that Congress doesn't want. So we have these informal mechanisms of checks and balances that are part of our constitutional scheme. After all, they are in the First Amendment to the Constitution, the media, church and state, academia, because there's also the First Amendment protects academic freedom. And so the system of checks and balances is not designed to get things done efficiently, but it's also not necessarily designed to have gridlock over everything. And so today the balance has shifted too far away from appropriate checks and balances and too much toward partisan gridlock. And I suspect that what's going on in the House today, the inability to vote for and have a majority vote for a particular Speaker of the House of Representatives, is going to be fairly typical of what's going to happen once the Speaker is selected. Let's assume the Speaker is selected, still has to pass legislation. And if you get a Republican Party that is dominated by the Freedom Caucus, and it's a small majority, and if they can't work with the Democrats, and that 20-person minority says, no, we're not going to allow legislation to pass unless you give us A, B, C, D, right-wing extremist views on everything, we're not going to pass legislation. We may see this gridlock extend well beyond the days or weeks even that might be required for selecting a speaker. Look, we could come out of tonight's delays and find out tomorrow morning there's a speaker. I don't think so. I doubt it. I think this is going to go on and on. In the end, Nobody knows whether it'll be Kevin McCarthy or whether it'll be somebody else. Who that person would be, we don't know. You know, there's a strange rule in the House. The Speaker of the House, who is second in line to be President of the United States, does not have to be a member of the House of Representatives. Think about that. Think about a President of the United States becoming president upon tragically the death of the president and vice president, being somebody who is not elected to anything, who was never elected, a private citizen. You, me, we could be Speaker of the House, and we could be president without being elected. That seems to be a pretty deep flaw in the Constitution, but it's there. And so, you know, technically, the Republicans could nominate Donald Trump to be Speaker of the House. Or on the other side, they could, you know, nominate somebody. They could actually nominate a senator to be Speaker of the House. One of the people that was in the list on the list was Ron Paul, who's very acceptable to hard right libertarians, and probably moderately acceptable to the middle. It's not something I would support or vote for, but it could be a senator. It could be somebody from the executive branch of the government. It could be somebody from academia. It could be anybody. And then they're second in line for the presidency. The person who's third in line of the presidency was just picked today, senator from Vermont. And she's the first woman to be president pro temp of the Senate. And she's next in line. And then it's the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Treasury, and go down the cabinet in order of its creation. Fortunately, we've never had that situation, but you know, with always the potential for example, 9/11 could have, if the plane were directed in a different way and had been a different trajectory, could easily have killed the president and the vice president, although in that case, the president was off reading to children somewhere in a different part of the country. But one can easily imagine a situation where a president and a vice president were together and were killed at the same time. And you would go down the list of people who would then be president of the United States. And the idea that a speaker of the House, number three, number two, I mean, the president's the president, then number one is the vice president, number two is the speaker. The speaker could be somebody who was never elected to any official a governmental position would, I think, shock a lot of people. So, welcome to Washington gridlock. Yogi Berra said prediction is difficult, especially about the future. So, I'm not going to make any predictions about who the next Speaker of the House will be. I think it's today seeming less and less likely that it's going to be Kevin McCarthy, but the 20 on the extreme right are not going to be able to come up with a candidate that is satisfactory to the middle. There will always be five or six or seven people from either side, left or right, center, that will have enough votes to prevent somebody from becoming the speaker unless there's a widespread consensus. There are a couple of names, obviously, that have been put forward that could conceivably be consensus candidates. Number two and three people in the House of Representative leadership of the Republican Party could. Now, there are those who speculate, what about Jeffries? He's gotten more votes than McCarthy. Why isn't he Speaker of the House? No, that's not the way it works. You need to get a majority of all the members of the House who are there and voting. And so there are not enough Democrats to create a majority for a Speaker of the House. I mean, if a number of Republicans decided to vote for the Democratic candidate, then Jeffries could be the speaker. That's not going to happen. And, you know, the other conceivable possibility, if the votes go on and on and on, and people get sick and people get tired and people have other commitments, you may get a vote suddenly where a lot of people are missing. And then if all the Democrats are there, there could be a majority of those voting for the speaker to be a Democrat. Again, I don't think that's going to happen, but it's conceivable. So we live in interesting times, as the Chinese curse goes, and we live in divisive times. And again, Donald Trump probably bears responsibility. Some of you may think that's positive, some of you may think it's negative, but I don't think anybody could dispute that the election of Donald Trump and then his failure to win re-election and his claim that he won the election have contributed mightily to the division in this country. Maybe they just revealed divisions that pre-existed, but certainly they were major contributing factors to what we see in the House of Representatives today. So let's see what happens tomorrow. Maybe by tomorrow we'll have a speaker. Don't know. So let's get to some letters. This is a good one. I would think the average life expectancy, remember I talked about why judges were appointed for life, because life expectancy was much lower than it is today. Got a couple of letters purporting to correct me. I'll read one of them. It's typical. I would think the average life expectancy being lower in that era would have more to do with children dying young rather than adults dropping dead in their early 50s. There's a lot of truth to that, but it's a combination of the two. So I went back and, of course, did my research and did some investigation. In the year 1900, if a person reached 15, he was likely, according to the charts that life insurance companies use, he was likely to live to 61. So if you reached 15 in 1900, if you were born in 1900, in 1915, you were likely to live till 1961. On the other hand, if you were born in 2020 and reached 15, you were likely to live to age 77. That's a 16-year difference. That's pretty considerable. And when you go back earlier to the 19th century, the numbers are even more dramatic. So, yes, of course, a lot of life expectancy was a function of infant mortality, but they counted life expectancy in two different ways, from birth to death, or from maturity, 15 years old, to death. But by either standard, the change has been quite dramatic, much more dramatic if you count infant mortality than if you just count adults who are dying. So good correction, but the truth is somewhere in between. Oh, here's one that just says Jim Jordan wants the chairmanship of the Judiciary Committee. Of course he does. He's looking to get even. He's looking to set up a committee like the January 6th committee. Maybe it'll be the Hunter Biden committee, but yeah, he'll play the same game, raise the same constitutional challenges that the Democrats did when they were in control of the Judiciary Committee. Okay, this is interesting. Recently visited the Harvard Coop. Obviously, I was at Harvard for over 50 years and probably sold, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of books at the Harvard Coop. Maybe that's more, but a lot of books. I've had, after all, a number. I've had a number one bestseller on the New York Times and seven other bestsellers. So I recently went to the Harvard Coop. We asked two employees where to find Alan Dershowitz's books. One employee said he is persona non grata around here after 50 years because I defended President Trump. I'm persona non grata in a store, the Harvard Coop, that's supposed to cater to everybody. I just said I was a supporter of free speech, and she apologized for a possibly offensive comment. Anyway, the Coop had three of your books. Well, two copies of one volume for a total inventory of four books. So obviously, the Coop is doing to my books what the Chilmark Library did to my books as well. Bookstores today have enormous amount of control over what people read, and the Harvard Coop apparently doesn't like my views on the Constitution, and so they're not selling my books. They're biting their nose to spite their face because obviously they make money off books, and my books were frequently a bestseller, certainly at the Coop. They used to feature them in the window all the time. And I would have book events at the Coop where I would read from my books. But if you defend President Trump in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're persona non grata. Okay. Ideally, the Supreme Court would be apolitical, but because it's not, I'd like to see it structured so that there's a balance of political ideology with four liberals and four conservatives, with the Chief Justice alternating between liberal and conservative every 4 years. Well, that's not the way I want to see it. I don't want to see any liberals or conservatives. I want to see nine justices who are great, great jurists, who understand the rule of law. And I couldn't care less whether they were liberal or conservative or libertarian or whatever. What I want to see is justices who obey the Constitution and who understand the rule of law. And over time, over history, there have been liberals, there have been conservatives. You know, Justice Harlan, when he got put on the Supreme Court, stopped voting, which was his right to do, to vote as a justice. But he said he didn't want anything to influence his judicial decisions. Oh, for the days where that were the case, no longer. Okay, here's, you always have to have one little nasty one every day. To their credit, indeed, the Supreme Court of the United States had the wisdom to dismiss the appeal of pedophile murderer Leo Frank. Remember Leo Frank? He was the innocent person who was Jewish in Atlanta, Georgia, who was framed for the murder of a young Southern woman. It was proved conclusively that he was not there and that he was not guilty. And ultimately, the governor commuted his sentence to life imprisonment, and then he was taken out and lynched by a gang of people, including ministers and sheriffs and doctors and prominent people in Marietta, Georgia. And then this letter continues. Even so, justice was upheld by the brave men of Georgia, who went and captured and blindfolded a poor guy, tied him up, and hung them from a tree, the brave men of Georgia who carried out the sentence themselves. Is this an instance of past as prologue? Funny, your pal Greenblatt, I don't know who that is, but it's a Jewish name, took some liberties with the facts of the case while aggressively race baiting. Once a liar, always a liar, kind of like you, Alan, a lying pedo, or pedo, I don't even know how you pronounce it, but that's my hate letter for the day. Get them every day. Sometimes they're a little bit more intelligent. This one was pretty stupid and ahistorical. Okay. Interesting. It's the institution that's important. I was talking about the Supreme Court as an institution, not the drift of its decisions. So simple the distinction. You don't change an institution unless it's broken. It's like Congress or the presidency. You may not like the laws or executive orders. That doesn't mean you tear down and remake it. There is the difference of the election of two branches, but an independent court is necessary. There's enough democratic influence on the court by president nomination, and then the Senate confirms. I agree with that. I think the Supreme Court of the United States has a lot of democratic input by the method of selection and confirmation, but it ought to be an elite institution that applies the Constitution fairly without partisan favor. I normally agree with you over 90% of the time, despite our different political points of view. However, I find fault in your analysis of the Israeli Supreme Court. The primary problem is that the court has become so left-oriented that it has created a situation where conservatives tend not to even enter the legal profession there. It's just not true. The legal profession is essentially conservative, centrist, conservative. Most of the members of the Knesset from Likud, or many of them, are lawyers. Many of the current people in the right-wing government are lawyers. And there are lots and lots of conservative lawyers in Israel. I think the Supreme Court of Israel is a very good institution. It's not that it leans left. It's that it leans toward human rights, that it leans toward basic civil liberties and basic equality. You may think of those as left. I think of those as part of the essential rule of law. And I hope that the Supreme Court of Israel, as well as the Supreme Court of the United States, continues to incline itself toward liberty and toward freedom, and away from denying people basic rights and basic liberty. Okay, there's another letter about life expectancy, but I've already read that. Professor, I recognize you are a patriot in the most positive sense of the word for the Democratic Party. I'm not a patriot for the Democratic Party. I easily could vote for a Republican Party if it the right circumstances. But if you ascertain that after winning the White House and control over both houses of Congress in the 2024 election, the Democrats were going to abolish the filibuster, pack the Supreme Court, and pass laws giving their party unassailable advantages in future elections, would you then consider voting for Republicans? Of course I would. It depends on who the Republican was, but I could easily vote for Mitt Romney. In fact, I regret not having voted for Mitt Romney when he ran against Barack Obama. I think it was a mistake on my part. If I had that vote to take back, I would take it back and vote for Mitt Romney. I also could imagine myself voting for either of the Bushes, depending on who they ran against again. But I could vote for a Republican, and I certainly would never vote for a party that wanted to pack the Supreme Court and pass laws giving partisan advantage to one party rather than the other. Okay, so this show endorses COVID and vaccines. How do you endorse COVID? I guess I endorse COVID by getting it. You can hear it in my voice. I'm in my second, my like 15th day of COVID. I'm getting a little better, but I still have it, and I'm hoping to be clear of it. But COVID exists. It's not a myth, and thank God for vaccines. I had four of them, four boosters plus the original vaccine, and I'm confident that it made my COVID less serious. I'm also in favor of complete openness and debate about these issues. I'm not in favor of censoring debate. I debated Robert Kennedy. He and I disagree about vaccines. And YouTube took down his part of the debate and wanted to keep up my part of the debate. And I said, no way, it was a debate. So both parts have to stay. And so we moved the debate over to Rumble, where it got over a million views. So yeah, I endorse. I don't know what it means to endorse COVID. COVID is real, and the vaccines really do help. See you tomorrow.